Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm joined this week by Father Tom Massaro, visiting editor here. Welcome, Father Tom.
Great to be here with you, Tim.
Now, Father Tom joined us when you first joined the staff back in August to talk about one of your columns. Now you're here to talk about a series you've been watching on PBS featuring Michael Sandel. Maybe you can describe it for us.
Sure. This is a 12-part series on PBS, so check your local listings. It is also available on the internet at www.justiceharvard.org. I watched it through the internet myself. One of the challenges, I suppose, it's probably a perennial challenge, is to successfully adapt what's basically a classroom lecture and discussion. It's very interactive, but it's still difficult to adapt a classroom presentation to something that looks good on video. And I think that PBS and Michael Sandel together and Harvard have succeeded in doing this. It's still a college course. It's still heavy on terminology. There's some of the schools of thought are mentioned a lot, utilitarianism and libertarianism and deontology, lots of mentions of figures like Aristotle and John Stuart Mill, etc. But I do believe this is a very successful adaptation on the themes of justice. It's both heady and intellectual, but also approachable by, I think, the listening audience. So recall that the subtitle of this series, Justice, What's the Right Thing to Do, calls our attention to the fact that there really are some issues of decision-making, almost practical advice for the audience who listens to Michael Sandel and his students.
I should mention that one of the reasons we're discussing this week is that there's a review of the book Justice that you just mentioned in the current issue with by John Coleman, a Jesuit priest in California. The reason we're bringing you in is you've written this online review for us in the print side, but we thought we could continue the conversation in the podcast, primarily because you have taught a lot of these figures, these writers, these thinkers before in your courses on justice. What is your assessment of Professor Sandel?
Well, having read all the same literature that he seems to cite, I think we have very similar library shelves in our homes, I would say that my assessment of Sandel is that he's extremely accurate, I would even say completely fair, on characterizing the contributions of figures like Aristotle and Kant and all the thinkers through history who've written about justice, whether it's John Locke or any number of others. So absolutely fair and clear on what their contributions are over time. And the next question to ask, of course, would be, is he successful in interacting with the students? That's probably the logical question that a critic of this series would ask. I would say that the liveliness of his class, the way that he shows great respect for his students, even when they seem to disagree with his own conclusions, is really quite commendable. I think all of us who are teachers and professors would aim for that amount of fairness. I think the only time I can really fault him is to say that he seems to have a case of amnesia. He can't seem to remember the students' names from time to time, which is probably not fair because I watched it in a very concentrated time period, and this unfolded over 13 or 15 weeks of a semester. You know, all professors try to prod their students to appreciate the complexity of a topic like justice. Students have a tendency to kind of shorten up the answers, maybe just to give a quick answer or even to dismiss some of the questions. Sandel, and I think all good professors, try to get their students to love the questions, not just answer the questions, to keep an open-endedness and sense of complexity about this. So I'm actually quite impressed by the vividness of his case studies and his basic approach to pedagogy as well.
Now, in his defense, if you watch these videos, you'll see he has a very large class. I mean, there's probably 300 students, 400 students in this large lecture hall, so I suppose he can be forgiven for not remembering all their names. One of the reasons we decided to discuss this is because we thought, well, what's the Catholic angle on some of these questions? What distinctively Catholic themes or critiques can you draw out of this series of lectures?
As I said, Sandel does a good job of what he attempts to do, which is to give a fair treatment to the history of theories of justice over the centuries. What's missing? A religious person might want to supplement to augment what Sandel presents in this series. Now, remember, he has a mixed audience. Harvard University is a thoroughly pluralistic environment, people of all faiths and none at all, people of all ethnic backgrounds. The age group is mostly people around 20, but there's a real mixedness to the audience. So Sandel cannot assume any baseline of agreement among his students, their worldviews, their cosmologies. As I was listening to the series and watching it, I was contrasting it to my own personal experience, which is a much more limited one. Teaching students who are mostly Catholic ministry students, getting master's and doctorates with the purpose of either teaching or ministering in a strictly Catholic setting. Most of my students are members of religious orders, priesthood candidates, or lay people studying for Catholic ministry. So I can assume in my classroom, which, by the way, is just a few blocks away from his classroom, I can assume a common, maybe a coherence, or at least an overlap of worldviews, mostly around gospel-based visions of social justice, the topics that I mostly teach. Can I give you some full disclosure, Tim?
Go ahead. Yes, please.
After watching him for about 12 hours, I am thoroughly jealous of Michael Sandel. And you already mentioned some of the reasons. His classes draw 10 times or more the size of the enrollments in my classes. They're extremely smart students, not that mine aren't, of course, but a typical Harvard student is a valedictorian of his or her class. And by the way, when he uses audiovisual materials, they all seem to work. That's something I'm still working on. He has a beautiful panel-lined classroom with classical Greek statues in the background, all these things that I'm not quite as accomplished as him. Even his selection of wardrobe, his ties, for example, are much more colorful than the ones I've ever owned or worn. But getting to more serious issues, the one thing that I'm not jealous of Michael Sandel concerns that audience, because in such a mixed audience, it seems that he has to appeal to the lowest common denominator. He has to start his discussions of justice from square one. He cannot assume any basic fundamental agreement as he starts his lectures. Whereas in a classroom, which I have the privilege of entering, where Catholics, especially ministry students, I can assume a common, maybe a gospel-based commitment to social justice. So, you know, I never expect a general audience, a pluralistic American crowd, a group you might assemble on a subway car or in a baseball stadium, I would never expect a broad section of people to agree 100% with the conclusions of the Catholic Church and its teachings on justice or any other topics. But it just seems to me that there's a little room for disappointment that the secular culture represented in his classroom, in the students, seem unable to develop a consistent methodology, a consistent approach that reflects all of the values that I would hope a cross-section would. So it might come down to a simple thing as the basic default position of his students seems to be individualism, non-judgmentalism, let everyone believe what they want to believe, whereas in a classroom that's religiously grounded, there would be a basis for making some judgments and probably a richer, thicker discussion.
So let's get down into those details. What specifically could a faith dimension, a Catholic dimension, add to a discussion of justice?
Well, I would say two things for sure. First, motivation. The motivation of a Catholic following the question of social justice, who deserves what, how do we make decisions in society and in face-to-face relations, the motivation for a Catholic would come out of discipleship, the desire to be a good disciple, to follow the way of Christ, to give each person his or her due against a religious background. We're all creatures of God, etc. The second faith dimension that is worth mentioning is the content of justice. And as I've already said, there's a common set of commitments. Maybe some people would use the word altruism or other regard. I would actually hasten to use the word communitarian thrust, which Catholics, when they think about the common good, when they think about our life together in society, we do think in terms of the communitarian, not just what's good for me, especially my own property, my property rights, but really what constitutes a fair distribution of the benefits of society, the burdens of society, like taxation, for rich and poor alike in our society. So I would certainly add that element to what we would hopefully add to Michael Sandel's treatment of justice.
Now, maybe you can say more about what this distinctively Catholic content of justice, maybe you could just summarize some of the principles at work here.
Well, actually, it's surprisingly difficult to summarize what, say, Catholic social teaching says about justice. It would require books and chapters at least. And one of the reasons for that is most often in our church documents, there's a lot of treatment of what constitutes an injustice. But there's only a few places where we can look for that kind of architectonic vision of justice, of what justice positively is, not just what an injustice consists of. So when we ask questions about property rights, about the rights of laborers, that's not hard to do. But it is a little hard to talk about the Catholic vision of justice with a sense of certainty, certainly with a sense of completion. That's really hard to do. But while I was viewing this 12-part series, I did keep a little running list on a notepad of things I would hope to see that actually didn't come up too often, at least not in the students' responses. Let me offer you four just kind of sound bites. One thing that I hoped to see and didn't, the proposition that some things are simply not for sale. There are some parts of our society that some goods that should be on markets, but there are some that should not be for buying and selling. Sandel uses many case studies, and one of them is the idea of surrogate motherhood. Should that be for sale? Or the idea of a sperm bank? Should our reproductive services be for sale? And I would say a Catholic worldview would rule out some of those things that Sandel and his students don't seem able to. A second item I would say is that some actions are simply out of bounds. They're not permissible, no matter what material gains might accrue from them. There are some case studies in Sandel about, for example, hiring a surrogate in a draft situation if you're conscripted for service in the Army. This actually happened during the American Civil War. Rich people could pay others to take their draft assignment. Again, that would be out of bounds in a Catholic worldview. Sandel students don't seem bothered by that. A third item would be concern for the desperately poor, which in a Catholic worldview should take priority over further privileges that accrue to the wealthy. Unfortunately, in this series, too often the idea that what is yours, you can keep. If it's your money, you shouldn't be taxed very heavily, or you should just keep your property, and no matter what the social cost, that's seldom, if ever, challenged. And maybe the fourth and final item I would mention would be a bundle of issues, notions like consent, merit, and autonomy. These are kind of individualistic approaches to the meaning of justice. And I would just remind the people who appear in this, Sandel and his students, that these principles, consent, merit, autonomy, do not exhaust the whole story of the human race. We're more than just our contracts. We're more than just our earnings. We have social obligations. So here's a note of the transcendent in Catholic social thought that doesn't appear very well in this treatment.
Does Sandel ever mention Catholic social teaching in any regard?
Well, not really explicitly. In fact, I was listening closely for the word Catholic, and it really only came up in any direct way in the 12th and final program, when two students were asked to comment on their opinions on the legality of same-sex marriages, which is a hot topic these days. Two of those students cited their Catholic faith for their positions. Sandel challenges any time a student has a very simple answer, what's the right thing to do, and he challenges authors as well. Sometimes his answers, his challenges, are congruent with Catholic positions on justice, and sometimes his answers and his students' answers are not. Behind all of what's going on at the surface of these very lively presentations is an awareness of what's been happening in theories of justice. In 1971, John Rawls, another professor at Harvard, one of Sandel's colleagues, as a matter of fact, published a groundbreaking book called A Theory of Justice, picking up on themes from Kant, from human rights theory, a desire for equality, egalitarianism, and that was really the groundbreaking work in moral philosophy on justice, 1971. A few years later, another Harvard professor, Robert Nozick, published his famous libertarian book, Anarchy, State, and Utopia, stressing freedom as opposed to equality from Rawls. And then about in the 1980s, around 1982, Sandel himself published his first major work called Liberalism and the Limits of Justice. And here he challenged both Rawls and Nozick from a more communitarian position, wanting to get rid of that simple notion of the unencumbered self of liberalism, where a neutral state and kind of unencumbered, non-tied down people are the norm. Sandel has made his career and his reputation upon challenging those kinds of thinkers, just plain liberal thinkers, to have a richer, thicker sense of human personhood and to try to develop the world and a type of government that respects these kinds of values. So on these points, Sandel overlaps nicely with Catholic thought on the importance of the common good.
Finally, the most recent Catholic document treating justice is Pope Benedict's July encyclical Caritas in Veritate. Are any of its themes relevant to this discussion?
Sure. It's our most recent social encyclical, July of 2009. And there, Benedict introduced a lot of thoughts, mostly in continuity with previous papal social encyclicals. The one item that I'd pick up on from that encyclical, Caritas in Veritate, which applies and actually could be very helpful to Michael Sandel, if I write him a letter, I'll mention he could pick up on this theme, is the theme of gift. Benedict makes much of the phrase, the experience of gift in human relationships. He talks about gratuitousness or gratuity. It's hard to translate some of those words from Latin into English, but that's what we come up with. This idea of gift, of people eager to give something to other people, to contribute to their lives, more than they're strictly required to do, really never comes up in Sandel's course. That's one of my slight disappointments with the overall package. Maybe this reflects our overall individualistic culture, our culture of acquisitiveness, the idea of gaining all you can, but not really paying attention to how other people are doing. So the idea of gift is a wonderful augmentation of what Sandel has to say. And just by way of closing, all of this goes back to a basic idea of what is the human person? What is our moral anthropology, our understanding of who we are? Are we simply choosers and consumers of goods? Or do we have, as a basic fundamental part of ourselves, an obligation to attend to others, to care about them, not just our friends, our family, but all citizens? Can we be a citizen of a polity that cares about the common good? This is one of the distinctive notes of Catholic social ethics. It's one of the things that often gets dropped out of secular discussions of justice these days. And I would hope that Sandel and his students could pick up on this theme. I'm not too pessimistic, actually, because there's been a resurgence of thinking about common good, writing articles and books about the communitarian perspective, which, for my money, gives me a richer, more satisfying portrayal of what social justice does in our world. I see the seeds of it in Sandel. He's written eloquently about the common good. I think he secretly tries to smuggle in some of the politics of the common good. Don't see so much of it in his students at this point, but hopefully with a skilled professor like Sandel, these students at Harvard and all other parts of our country, the rising generation, our future leaders, can imbibe some of the concern for others, the notion of the common good, and really in their own lives, do justice.
Well, you can see Father Tom Mazzaro's written review of this series at our website, americamagazine.org/culture. You can also, in our December 21st through 28th issue, see Father John Coleman's book review. Well, we want to thank Father Tom Mazzaro for taking the time to watch these 12 episodes. Was it 15 hours total?
It was about 12 hours.
12 hours. Okay. And you can, if you want to do that yourself, you can do it at www.justiceharvard.org. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine podcast. Reminder that you can read Father Tom Mazzaro's print review at americamagazine.org/culture. You can also go online this week for a series of art reflections occasioned by the season of Advent and Christmas. You can find those at americamagazine.org/video. And of course, you can respond to our conversation by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.